You are listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey, kids.
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance-off, bro. Me and you.
Hello, and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there. This is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gill.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool. I mean, Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff. This is going to be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Hey Kids Comics. I'm Dan Collins.
I'm Sam Tweedle.
Chris Gilpin.
All right, just like always.
Just like always.
Except this is the first time the three of us have been in the studio.
For a long time.
For 2 months.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that. Marty, I found out this morning, wasn't feeling well. Has anybody been in touch with Marty today to know if he's feeling better?
I think he's a little under the weather.
Yeah. Yeah?
I'm not getting any sound here, so I'm going to take that out.
Okay.
Well, that's what happens when you plug earbuds in, and you can just barely reach the microphone with one ear. Right. So that was very awkward.
Fault. Well, you know what? Yeah, well. Okay, all right.
I can't find my other headphones.
Well, look, we got a special show planned for today. I think we're going to talk about a lot of different things today. There's still a lot of things to talk about, but we got a special show planned today. It's been kind of I guess we touched on it a bit last week.
We sort of just mentioned it.
Yeah.
In passing,
but
almost,
you know what?
But...
Locally here in Peterborough, we've all known that the comic book industry in Peterborough has been a little in crisis for a little bit of a while. You know, it's been Crisis on Infinite Peterborough Earth. And as we know, last Saturday, Dixon's Books closed its doors, opened and closed its doors for the final time. And I think that's affected emotionally a lot of people, a lot of comic fans in Peterborough, especially longtime comic fans. And as someone said online, I think it was Marty said online this morning, that it's affecting a lot of us in ways maybe we didn't necessarily realize. Yeah. You know, we've definitely been going through stages of grief. And we're going to talk about Dixon's a little bit today. And we're going to really, you know, there's a lot that can be said. There's good things and there's bad things and there's a lot can be said. But we really want to talk about some of the good times and maybe a little bit of history of the place. And just talk about our memories and what the place meant as an institution, not just to Peterborough, but I also like to say on even the comic industry in Ontario, because it had its own little special history that I don't think a lot of people in Peterborough are aware of.
Well, there was never a ton of bookstores around here, like comic stores, lots of bookstores, but
yeah.
Comic book stores.
I just want to say what happened today. Today, this morning, I had to go to the bank first thing, and I hadn't been downtown at all since Dixon's closed, and I parked right across from Dixon's, and I was just kind of curious, and I walked over to Dixon's, and I looked in the window, and it's been gutted.
Yeah,
I really felt it was going to be one of those things where you're going to be able to walk in, and everything they had there was going to be there for maybe a couple of weeks while they slowly cleaned up. Back in the 90s, I worked at Netherworld Comics, and it took us a month to tear that store down.
Yeah.
Okay, and that store was only open for about 8 or 9 years. Yeah. Dixon's was there for...
40? I don't know.
37 years.
Yeah.
Okay? It opened the year my brother was born. Mm-hmm. Okay, it was there for 37 years, and it has already been gutted. The counter is gone, the cash register, the shelves, the racks, everything that have been sitting there. Literally sitting there for 37 years, because that place barely changed in 37 years, and it's gone. It's like the store was never there.
Yeah.
It's like 37-year legacy, gone. Gone in a heartbeat. And to me, it was like, there was so much pent-up emotion to me, because I thought about, like, the year, I've been going there since 1985.
Yeah.
And, or, you know, I shouldn't say I've been going there since then, but that's when I started going there in 85, I think, is when I first stepped in there. And to see it gone, like if it was never even there, was very haunting and very sad. And if you want an experience, anyone who's walking down Water Street, that's been in that store, check it out, because it's very haunting.
Honestly, I've been avoiding it this week.
Yeah.
Because I work right across the street, right?
That's right, so, yeah.
But you can kind of see it from the upstairs window, so I've been looking. And until you said that, I finally walked by it, and the for lease sign is in the window now. And yeah, it's just empty, just stripped. So.
And you're just like, how? It was so fast.
Yeah, yeah.
It's haunting. It's a haunting thing, and it is. It's a bit of a mark. So I don't even know where to go from here. We have so much to say.
Do you want to start with like the history and stuff, and before we get into our personal sort of memories and stuff?
Sure, sure. Do you know a little bit about the history, Chris?
Or no,
you
want me to go?
Well, Dixon's is basically was the heart and soul of Dixon's was Mr. Art Dixon. Yeah. Arthur Dixon. And I took a little bit of look. Art Dixon opened Dixon's in 1979. He was a much older man than I think a lot of people of us even realized at the time. He was already in his 50s, and he was working as the manager of H&R Block, and he decided to retire, leave that, and open a bookstore, which it had always been his dream was to open. He was a book collector, a stamp collector as well. Yep. You know, I didn't know this, but he was president of the Peterborough Stamp Society for a number of years.
It wouldn't surprise me. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I did. I looked up some stuff today that unfortunately I forgot to bring. It's sitting at home. I have an article about him when he passed away, and I have his obituary stuffed in a book, and I was going to bring it in today. But yeah, he was president of the stamp collector, and he always dreamed about opening a bookstore. So in 1979, he opened Dixon's Books, which was just a paperback store, bookstore on Water Street. And he had a son working there. And at one time, I don't know if you remember this, he had a really large staff. Like, I mean, there was he had Christine, who was a girl who lived in there. He had another guy, Steve, and then he was there. I think he had four or five staff members at one point.
Really? I don't even remember that.
Yeah, back in the 80s. And, but anyways, in 1980, I think it was probably about 1983 when the comic book started the direct market. Art Dixon was one of the first stores in Canada to try to bring in comics as a sideline. Of course, there was the Silver Snail in Toronto that was doing that. But I think they came a little bit afterwards, and they were just going to be a full-time comic store where Art decided to bring comics in as a sideline. Mm-hmm. As a result, I don't think a lot of people realize Dixon's Books was one of the oldest existing comic book stores in Ontario, potentially in all of Canada. And the reason was because a lot of these stores that started selling comics in the 80s had all come and gone. Comic stores have always come and gone, come and gone, come and gone. Yeah. Only now do they seem to be surviving. Even the Silver Snail's not what it once was. No. And Dixon's pluttered on. Even in Peterborough, we had another, Dubai's Hobbies tried to do comics after Dixon's, but based on their mm-hmm. model. Yep. Netherworld Comics, where I worked, and it had a nice little run. Then there was the Comics Shed, which is probably the least said about that, the better. I remember I used to go in there and they had like knives and birdhouses, but they didn't have very many comics.
No.
And of course, there was Jeff's Comics and Cards, but Dixon's was always just this. That's where it was always there, you know?
Yeah, and Jeff's had a, I always thought Eyeball Soup was a spinoff of Jeff's.
It was.
Yeah, okay.
It was. It was owned by the same.
Okay.
But, Jeff's was up on
Park Hill.
Yeah. And Eyeball Soup was downtown, but it was the same store, just different locations.
Yeah.
And then they merged, later on, when Jeff's came downtown.
And Martin says that Memory Lane in Toronto was the first.
I knew that, actually. I think Marty posted something about that online a little bit ago. Yeah. But that was the 60s, I believe.
Yeah,
that was a real not obscure, but rare model.
Yeah.
So Dixon's, and I think when Art, because me and Art used to talk a lot about this stuff. I knew Art really well, and we talked a lot. And when he first brought in comics as a sideline, he just figured it'd just be something to try and, you know, maybe make a few extra bucks. He did not think that was going to become the. And I don't think Art ever really thought of Dixon's Books as a comic book store.
No,
it was a bookstore that sold comics.
Yeah.
That was the way he looked at it. But for comic fans, that was the comic book store in Peterborough.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where the popular place for a while was to buy comics, Dixon's was your what's the word I'm looking
go-to.
For? It was I guess. So of course Art died in I want to say I looked it up today and it didn't seem
2009.
Like 2009. It was 2009, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was the heart and the soul and the breath of that place. The fact that I think that we went from 2009 to 2016 without Art is actually pretty cool. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So because I think when anyways, well, let's talk more about that in a bit. Let's
yeah.
Okay, so that's kind of a little bit of the history of Dixon's, I suppose, yeah. At least in the comics selling side of it. I also remember this too, is that Dixon's was, despite being the oldest comic store in Peterborough and one of the oldest in probably all of Canada, no, not oldest in all of Canada, but longest living one.
Yeah.
They were extremely late when it came to comic. What do you call that? Where you put your comics away? The files.
Oh, the files. Yeah.
They were really late with the files.
Oh, were they?
Yeah. Yeah. I think
just come in and get your. Yeah.
Come in and get your books. We'll talk more about that. But I think that was one time part of why people would go elsewhere, and you went to Dixon's when you missed like. Superman number. Yeah, I remember. I think one time I missed Supergirl number one, so I had to run to Dixon's to get it. That was your thing, but
yeah, and that probably leads into one of my memories too as to why it was the way it was. But anyways,
okay. Well, actually, let's go with Dan. I've been kind of just free willing it.
You've been freestyling.
Freestyling. Freestyling. I'll bring it back to Dan. Where do you want to go with this roundtable? These memories.
These memories, yeah, I don't know.
I'm curious where Dan started.
Yeah, why don't we talk about how we first came across Dixon's? And you know what, Marty? I know you're at home. Maybe we could take a call from Marty too.
I don't know how.
We have Martin online.
We have line on numbers. We just can't reach him.
Call the cell phone up to the to the.
Well,
to the
you
microphone.
Know what? But we could try.
He's a little under the weather. I don't know if he wants to cough.
Well, Marty, you could try to call us too, and maybe we'll try to get you online. Not saying it's going to happen, but we could try.
Well, I don't remember how I found Dixon's. I do remember that my parents bought books there.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that that is the connection. Mm-hmm. But the biggest connection to me is going to school at PCBS.
Yeah.
And when I got into the comics, I would the memory is me leaving PCBS, going to the back of Papa's Billiards, cutting through the back door of Papa's Billiards and maybe playing a video game, but then going over to Dixon's to buy comics.
Okay.
That's my earliest memory.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember how.
Exactly what it was.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that it was my parents because they were big into books.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Dan?
Well, unlike you guys, I'm kind of a really late comer to comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was only probably like 2008 or 2009. Mm-hmm. Art was still there when I started.
Yeah.
But I moved back to Peterborough in 2008. So it would have been really close to that. And I just wanted to, I'd always been reading graphic novels, decided I wanted to buy comic books instead of graphic novels. And I just walked in one day and started picking out comics I wanted to collect.
Well,
I kind of went to Jeff's and was talking to somebody at Jeff's and then went to Dixon's and talked to them and just went, I'll just go to Dixon's.
Yeah, I remember, and this is going to be a long, convoluted story, but I think they're the best kind. They are, and I think this has a little bit of charm. When I was a kid, obviously, like most kids, you bought comics at Becker's.
Yeah.
You bought it at the corner store.
Oh yeah.
I remember I used to think that there was a store called it still exists actually called Jay's Variety, not Jay's Variety. Jay's Variety. It's over by GE. And I had I believed that Jay's Variety sold better comics than anybody else in town. And I would actually walk past, you know, five convenience stores with comics just to go to Jay's, which probably had the same comics that were at the five other ones, right? But that's what you did. And I remember when I was a kid, probably about the third grade, my aunt brought me to the Silver Snail in Toronto. It was the first time I'd gone to a comic store. I'm like, so to me, comic book stores were in Toronto.
Yeah.
Right? That's where the comic book store was. When I was 9 years old, I got really, really into Doctor Who. And I discovered the Target novelizations. And there was only one place I knew where to get Target Doctor Who books. And it was actually at Towers. Remember Towers?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And they would maybe have three or four, but that's all they would have, right? And I met a man in Peterborough named Dean Shoering, who ran the Doctor Who club, which I believe still exists. And I believe Dean is still ahead of it. I've talked to people, I don't know. And I was with my mom, and I was like, I want to find more Doctor Who books. And Dean said, go to Dixon's Books. They have a rack that's just all Doctor Who. And I don't know if you'll remember, the rack's still there. Do you remember, or it's not today, but do you know how there was like the comics along the, you know, on the old iron, and then there was that one other little bit of comics. And then there was a rack with graphic novels that no one ever bought. I'm sorry, how many copies of The Death of Gene DeWolf did they have there for like 20 years, okay? But do you remember that? You remember that rack? You know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That rack was all Target novelizations, Doctor Who magazine from England. It was just like, at that time, this was about 1984, Art was bringing in every Doctor Who item he could from England, and he would put them up there. And this was at a time where Doctor Who was not popular. So my mom and dad drove me to Dixon's to look for Doctor Who books. So I walked in, and it was like, oh my God, comic books. Yeah, it was just like,
in Peterborough?
You know, the Doctor Who books are great, but it's a comic book store. Yeah. Ah, I was so like, how was this here? And I didn't know. I mean, it fractured my brain, right?
Yeah.
It was the worst thing that happened to my parents, because every Saturday, the moment they woke up, I gotta go to the comic book store. And it started, but that started a lifestyle for me from the age of 9 on, going to the comic book store every week. I have another odd memory about that first visit to Dixon's, okay? I can remember, and I don't know why I can remember this, but I can actually tell you they had a poster in the front window for an upcoming comic book series. And I can still to this day remember what the poster was. And do you remember the Red Tornado miniseries from 1984?
No.
Okay, in 1984 there was a Red Tornado miniseries, which I either may still have or I may have sold it at my dollar sale last. And it was the cover to Red Tornado number 2.
Oh.
And it was like, you know, and by Red Tornado. And I remember that being in the window, because I remember kind of walking up to the comic store and seeing the Red Tornado poster. And I knew who Red Tornado was, because I already read comics, and going, oh, whoa. You know, and you walked in, it was like, comics. So and another cool memory too. So when we were talking about, and this is going to show you how different I think the world has just gone from us growing up in the early 80s to the way things are today. As my mom and dad got really sick of driving me to the comic store every Saturday morning. Like, it was just like, we'd had enough of this. So when I got into grade 7, so this is about 1987, mom and dad said, okay, it's time you learn to take the city bus downtown.
Yeah.
Okay. And in 1987, I would have been about 12. So every day after school, I went to Keith Whiteman School, and I went across the street and sat and waited for the bus. And I took the bus after school to the bus terminal on Simcoe and went to Dixon's to buy my comics with my allowance. Yeah. And then eventually mom and dad would come. Somebody would come and get me at the mall. And I did that all the way until must have been at least grade 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't in grade 7 anymore, but I went to a high school, but I was still going downtown. And then some of my mom's clients would work downtown at 5 o'clock. They would give me a ride home if I met, you know.
Yeah.
And that was what you did on Friday. Not Thursday. Thursday was comic book day, but on Friday you went down after school. And who would think of like sending their 12-year-old downtown on the city bus now?
No. Some people do it, but it's very rare.
It's pretty rare, but that's what you did.
Yeah.
So it's funny, back then though, the Dixons didn't know me. I was just some other kid that came in, but But yeah, so those are that's kind of my earliest memory of Dixon's, and also
who's at the door?
Oh,
it's Mr. Baruda.
Oh my God, Marty made it! Hey, come on in.
Okay, when I was a kid, you bought comic books on a spinner rack. Now this story's on Facebook, so if you read the Facebook, you've heard this one already. But whatever, you bought comics at a spinner rack and a Max Milk. You'd go there and you'd squeak, 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 squeak. You'd buy your comics. Now, not all the time did you have the right comics there, right? So you'd be like, oh, I miss Superman, or I miss Batman, or I got to go to the drugstore because you can't have this. Yeah. So when I was a kid, we started walking around, and I can't remember what it was. My mom was doing something at the post office at Charlotte Street. Mm-hmm. And right across the street was Sandy's The Bookstore. So you walk into Sandy's. And Sandy used to have a rack of comic books and magazines just in the back, just a little bookshelf with some used comics.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my goodness, you can buy old comic books for like a quarter? So that was at Sandy's, right? So I'm all excited about this. And this has got to be 79, 80-ish. So dawns on my little head that if this used bookstore has used comics, there's got to be another used bookstore that carries comics. So I'm scouring the yellow pages. I know you millennials don't know what a yellow pages are. I'm scouring the yellow pages under books. And there's this big ad, Dixon's Books, Water Street. Well, I can find that. Mm-hmm. Walk in. Art's behind the counter. Hello, young man. I walk in. I'm like,
comic book.
Right there in the corner. So in the corner. Now, I don't know if you guys remember at Dixon's right now, at the end of his little comic coffin bins, there's a little table. Yeah, that's what you call them, right? Coffins, right? There's a little table there, and in the table was trade paperbacks. Mm-hmm. Well, that little table was pushed up against the wall in the little nook where the rack is with all those weird comics that nobody ever bought.
Yeah, I was just talking about
that. Yeah. So that's where...
put Doctor Who books
in. Yeah, well, that's where that was for a little while. It was just kind of pushed in that little niche there. And there must have been, you know, maybe a short box and a half of used comics. Now, where Sandy had like 10, 15 used comics, Art had like 100.
Yeah.
100! There's like a bunch of used comics I can choose from, Archie!
Now, let me just get this straight, though, because you've been going, you went there longer than any of us. This was before he got into the direct market?
Oh, yeah, big time. This was just used book stuff.
Okay.
This was just used book stuff. So, you know, you'd go in there and you'd just grab some used comics. No bags and boards. Nothing was bagged and boarded. This is before people bagged and boarded and stuff. Yeah. And I just started coming in and buying used comics. And eventually, like you said, he got into the direct market stuff. So the rack went up against the wall. Those bins came out and then started getting filled up. And that's just where you'd go to get comics every week.
This kind of goes, this will jump forward a bit, but this kind of leads to your no-pull list thing, Sam.
Okay.
So I don't know, I can't remember why, but I would always show up at Dixon's just as Art was putting up the new books.
I know this story. Right? Because, right? And you know.
That
you know,
was the Friday ritual.
That was the Friday ritual. And you know what's going to be so funny is I'm sure that we were all together and we didn't know each other.
That's right.
So those of you that don't know.
Listen to Chris, because this is the way it went down. It's hilarious.
So Art would be between the coffin comics and the rat. And the rat.
And he'd be with Steve.
And he'd have his clipboard and the box of new comics. And the kids were on the other side.
Oh, not at the beginning.
Oh, well, not at the beginning. Because
what happens is the comics would come in Friday in the afternoon. We'd get off school, catch the city bus down from the school to the comic shop, run in. It's like, are the new comics out? No, they're not out yet. Oh, and we'd stand there waiting for them.
We would stand there waiting. And if we dared.
Like I said in my little story on Facebook, I'm pretty sure Steve took a tumble over one of my Adidas bags. Because we were completely underfoot.
Yeah.
So that's when Art kind of implemented the policy that, you know, hey, if we're going to start putting the books out, everybody, other side of the cabinets, you have to stay there. Don't bug us. And he got really mean.
Like if we dared went past the comic coffin over where they were putting away the new books, like, He wouldn't quite throw you out.
No.
But you'd have a good scolding.
Oh, he'd give you the stern look.
And he'd tell you right off in front of all the other kids.
Yeah.
And we'd all be there. And you got to understand, it wasn't just me, Marty, and Chris not knowing each other. There'd be about, like, at least, I would say, like, 15 of us.
Oh, at least. Because the other thing is, like you said, without the pull list, it was first come, first serve,
right?
And if there was only six copies of ROM number 26 there, and there was eight of us that wanted it, there was some, you know.
There's only one that I can, it's funny, I only knew one other kid. There was a kid that was in my school named Byron who was a little bit older. Byron's brother worked there. He had dark hair. He was this little dark-haired guy.
Yeah, see, I don't remember.
Yeah, people don't remember. Byron's brother worked there. But I remember Byron would be there, and I'd be there. Byron was a little bit older than me, and we would all be there. But there was only one time I remember a virtual rampage, and it was for...
Death of Superman?
No, it was earlier. It was Robin number one.
Oh, God.
It was the first issue of the Tim Drake Robin miniseries, and I remember just everybody just sitting there, and all of a sudden Art said, you can go now, and everybody just like, you know? Now, what was good is... Art had enough for everybody.
Most of the time.
But he had all enough of... Nobody went left with out an issue of Robin number one.
Yeah.
But I just remember it was just like literally like all these kids just... And when I say kids, like it was... I would say between... I would have been about... Let's say I started doing it was I was about 12. So anybody between 12 and 20.
Well, I was doing it in high school, so...
Yeah.
I was like a 17-year-old with my elbows out ready to take out any of you little whippersnappers getting in the way of my Robin.
We had to be there at the same time.
We had to be. But were you guys there for Robin number one?
Oh, I'm sure I was.
Yeah, because I just remember this. People just dive, like everybody just running for... like. It didn't matter what other book came out. It could be Watchmen number one could have been on the stand that day.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know what else came out.
Yeah.
But Robin number one, it's just this virtual rampage, and everybody had one, but we didn't care. We were ready to kick someone in the face if we had to.
I just remember just getting used to that, and I would stand there and watch a kid just start trying to sneak up.
that was me working away behind them because I'd get the W's done, and I'd be reaching around for the Uncanny X-Men, and then I would like snap, go, I said wait. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's what he'd say.
Yeah,
I remember that. And of course, you never see that kind of stuff in the comic book store today.
No.
But I just...
Now, you don't remember that building that you park at now, right across from Scotiabank?
I love this
story. There used to be a building there.
Yeah.
Well, I'd catch the bus from Adam Scott downtown and then walk from the terminal just to Dixon's, grab my books and stuff. And there used to be a bench right there. My dad used to work Lansdowne and Ashburn. So I'd get there and I'd just sit there, just reading my comics on that bench until Pop finished work and he'd come down through East City across the bridge, pick me up, and away we went back home.
Yeah.
So there were times where I was sitting on that bench for an hour or 2 hours reading my books. So if you guys ever remember a dorky-looking guy over there, that was me.
Now, I used to go, I used to be picked up at the mall in front of the It store.
And you were one of them kids.
Yeah. I was
mall rat.
Well, that's back when Lansdowne Place actually Peterborough Square actually had stores, and it was kind of a good mall.
Yeah.
There was a day, kids. It really, it was a cool mall at one time to. Yeah, so that's where I was. That's where I was hanging. Sorry, man.
That's where I bought like 90% of my Star Wars figures was at the Eaton's.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
They are consumers distributing.
Yeah.
Forget Kmart. Nobody liked Kmart.
Yeah. But yeah, I know when they started doing the files, that was after, I guess that's why I first went to Another World, because Another World was the first store in Peterborough that was doing the comic files, and that kind of what attracted me there.
Yeah.
But when that store closed, that's kind of what attracted me back to Dixon's, because somebody said, well, you know, I was always going to Dixon's to, you know, for looking for stuff that I couldn't get. We didn't get in or we missed or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what brought me back there, was because I wanted my comic file, right? That was important at that time.
Well, I started going to Another World there.
That's where I met you. That's where I met you. That's not where I met you, Dan.
Not necessarily knowing that they had a pull list, but it was just a new store and I walked in. And Ted was like, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy actually reads the comics. Because that's the only kind of, I won't say gripe that I have against Art, was that he was a great businessman and he knew the products to get for the kids. But it wasn't really a fellow that you could sit there and shoot the breeze with about the adventures of Spider-Man.
Well, or, you know what? Or Superman, yeah, but I'm gonna interject with this is a lot of people. You may remember Dixon stayed open late on Friday, and on Friday they would stay open till 7:30 at night, and I don't know why. Maybe it was because of the Friday ritual, and it just stayed that way. So there was a lot of Fridays where I would go in after work or after when I was at Trent or whatever, and I would actually go and bring our coffee, and we would sit and we would talk because there was a lot of traffic in, but he was there late.
Yeah.
It was quiet, and we would visit. Art was a huge fan of two comics, and it was Lil Abner and Pogo.
And so it's nothing would, that the
no, it wasn't.
Kids
those,
would talk about.
Those are strips, not comics.
Yeah, and, but me, but of course, I had a real a big understanding of Lil Abner.
We need to have an intervention with Sam with his strips.
You know, we so we would.
He keeps talking about strips.
Yeah, so we would talk Lil Abner.
They're not books. They're strips.
Okay, shut up, or I'll start talking about Luann right now. Okay, instead of later. You know, but so we would talk about Lil Abner, and we would talk about Pogo. And what's interesting is when Art died, Miss Dixon actually had a whole bunch of Lil Abner collections that were Art's that she actually gave me, and they're in my bedroom on the shelf. Like not the whole series, but and I guess they found some old Pogo books in the back.
But
Art would always say those were the only two comics he knew anything about.
Yeah.
Was Lil Abner or Pogo. But Marty was saying that he did have he knew what to bring in for the kids, and he had a real business sense. Maybe he didn't know what was going on in X-Men at that time.
But this
is a really interesting factoid. A really interesting memory I remember about Art. Do you remember how many years ago did DC start doing that Thundercats book? Remember when DC did the Thundercats book briefly?
That was a long time.
That was a while ago.
Yeah.
But do you remember when Marvel Star Comics did the Thundercats book?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was even longer.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I remember one time bringing in my pull list, and I had the new and Art would go through your pull list really carefully.
Yeah, yeah. Make sure you can get it.
Make sure, yeah.
That, yeah.
And I remember one time he looked, and he was like, Thundercats. I remember there was a Thundercats book at one time that we couldn't move off the shelf. We couldn't sell it. And, of course, I'm looking at it, and, like, that would have been that 84-85 series. Or, yeah, or the Marvel one.
Oh, the Marvel Star.
Star Comics. Yeah. Okay, but knew. He had a photographic memory for knowing what he could sell and what he could not sell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could have said, so, you know, you Doom 2099. Like, how'd that sell, Art? And he could tell you. You know what I mean? Or you could say something like, you know, did you ever get that Red Tornado miniseries? How'd that go back in 83? He could tell you if they sold it or not.
Yeah.
Like he had this, he may not have known what the storylines, but he knew what sold and what didn't sell.
Yeah. 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 So I think I posted this on my personal page, but that weird feeling that hit me when we were in Niagara Falls and I was going to meet Chris Claremont is that when I really got into comics, I wanted to start at something that was close to number one. Mm-hmm. And X Factor was,
yeah,
it was like 9 or 10 or something like that. So it was easy to go back. But when it got to the Fall of the Mutants, and I was like, okay, well, I got to read this other X-Men and this new mutant thing, right, to see what's going on. And I read Uncanny X-Men. That just like blew me away. So it was just weird that Saturday I was meeting Chris Claremont, who wrote the X-Men back then for the first time. And on the same day, Dixon's was closing. You know,
it
just hit me for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
But more of a more recent thing for me, because I sold my collection, my whole collection I sold a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and we won't get into the reasons why, but it was at a tough time in my life, let's put it that way, that I'm just miserable and I'm really down, right? And I'm thinking, you got to do something that makes you happy to bring yourself up. Meanwhile, every day, at least 3 or 4 times a day, I'm walking by Dixon's because I would go home for lunch.
Sex makes me happy.
Well, that too.
Do that instead.
But that, yeah.
It's cheaper.
But
not really.
But then it dawns on me, and this had to be like 13, 14, maybe 12, 13 years ago, where I was not buying comics anymore. And it dawns on me, comic books. Like, that always made you happy. And I just jumped right back into it again, right? So,
and are you happy, Chris?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that helped level me out, right? Because it takes your mind off everything and mm-hmm. something you enjoy.
It's true.
And then, of course, I had to go back and try and rebuy my whole collection, which was just foolish. Mm-hmm. But
but well, I don't know why, but it, like, all of the different hobbies that I've ever had and collections of this and collections of that, it's always comic books that I end up going back to.
Yeah.
My comic buying has really changed a lot since I met you guys. I started hanging out with you guys. I'm not quite the comic. I've decided I'm not a collector. I was an accumulator.
Yeah.
Because you guys are collectors. But so I don't quite have the same focus on comics that I may once have. But at the end of the day, I still buy a comic every week. I still have to read comics every day. I love those characters. I love the storyline. I like the feel. It's always going to be part of my life no matter what I do. That's why I have comic characters tattooed on my body. That's why I'm getting more tattooed on my body. Because it's something that's always going to be part of me. And I think, going to Dixon's, if you lived in Peterborough, going to Dixon's was part of that experience. Look at the way that we bonded just over that story about all being behind the counter and how many more people listening out there today were with us and we didn't even know each other. That's something interesting, the difference between what was going on in the 80s and now. We did not have a comic book community.
Yeah.
We weren't a community. Marty has had a lot to do with building the community here in Peterborough, wanting that community and having that vision.
Well, I don't know about that. Well, just maybe our little clique here. You know, there's different communities. Yeah. I'm sure there might be another group of people that are, you know, just as passionate about comics in Peterborough that, you know, meet and do stuff. I don't think it's like an exclusive.
Well, I don't know. I think a lot of us kind of, if I find out there's someone I didn't know that was reading comics and I knew them, I'm usually pretty surprised. It's like, whoa, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been surprised the last couple of years meeting different people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we've all kind of connected, right?
Somewhere. The community aspect of comics, even though we all had that store to go to, it didn't really exist too well.
Yeah.
I think we should talk a little bit before we get too far, though. I want to talk a little bit about Miss Dixon because I don't remember Miss Dixon being around a lot back in the 80s. She
still had her regular job, didn't she?
She had a regular job,
That's one of the reasons why Art had staff and stuff, and the two Steves, and there was a gal there, too.
Christine was her name.
Yeah.
Steve was the other younger guy. Yeah, I couldn't think what his name was. The two Steves, Christine.
Yeah, Steve was the other Steve was the only one I remember, because he worked at
But there was a younger guy, too. Yeah. There was a younger, dark-haired guy.
Not as well, but after.
Yeah. But there was a long... Christine went on to Dubai. She started the comic books at Dubai's.
Well, so did Steve. He went that way as well.
Well, Steve was at Another World Comics.
No, I remember when I went to Dubai's.
I remember Christine being
there. Steve was there, and he's the one that said, hey, we've got pull lists if you see anything on the shelf you want. So I think there might have been a few weeks or months
where maybe.
He was doing both.
Who knows?
Gosh, only knows. I mean, they were all like university kids and stuff, so they could have more than one.
But I always thought they were kind of cool. You know, it was. But I just remember Miss Dixon just sort of showed up eventually. You know, it was like she was kind of a fixture there. And God, the woman was endearing.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Marty's always done the greatest impersonation of Miss Dixon. He's really good. He's able to pick up all her endearing qualities.
I am not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
No, but you can
bring... No.
I always thought the one thing about Miss Dixon is... And I think anyone who ever walked in the comic book store probably saw this over the last, 5 years. But I one time gave them a Christmas card, and it had it was a pun. And it was a reef, and it had Ricardo Montalbán as Khan from Rafa Khan in the middle of the card. And it said, Reef of Khan. And Miss Dixon thought that was the funniest thing. So for the next 6 years, she had it by the cash register.
And anyone
who came in, she would point it out to them or whatever. I gave him that card. And years, and it sat there like constantly. And Miss Dixon loved her puns, let's face it.
Yeah.
I found out, you know, those little sandwich bag puns she's had over a little while?
Yeah.
Well, at the little assisted living facility that she's at, the young man who makes her bag lunches, he's the one that puts the puns on it. Coincidentally, his name is Martin. So anyone says that these jokes were written by Martin, not this Martin, a different Martin, but he's brilliant because they were awesome.
Yeah, she just loves puns and she loves wordplay. She actually briefly...
Why can't you trust the lion?
Why?
Because they're always lying.
But you know, the truth is Mystics, and you know, she even briefly had a blog online.
Oh yeah.
And it was so full of like cute stories and little witticisms and wisdoms and stuff like that. I don't know if it's still there, but I used to really enjoy her her little blog. She was just a sweet, sweet, sweet lady.
She was a runner too, eh?
She's in the Peterborough Athletic Hall of Fame at the Memorial Center. You can go and find her, Rayma Dixon, because she won a marathon.
Yeah.
Like she came in first at some marathon.
Yeah.
Her and Art actually met on that circuit because she was a marathon runner and he was a timekeeper.
Oh.
Yeah.
match made in heaven.
That's, I know, right. And that's actually how they met, was on the on the circuit. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she won, I don't know what marathon, I don't know if it was like the Boston Marathon or the Pan Am Marathon or what it was, but she came in first at some marathon, and that's why she's at the, you can go to the Memorial Center, and they have all the, all the plat. What's the...
Nobody can hear you, Sam. There you punched the microphone.
What do you call those, like the plaques and the drawings, and they have the histories of off athletes, but Miss Dixon is actually, she's over by, I can tell you where she is, too. You got to go to the east side of the building, and it's when you're going to like that big refreshment stand near the back of the building. You can find her along there. Yeah. Okay. So it's on the east side of the building. Because I remember one time, I don't know what I was there, but I was bored as all sin, and I just spent like a couple of hours looking
just
for
reading.
Her.
No, looking for
I was just looking for her. Yeah, because I knew she was there.
Mm-hmm. So while we're on the topic of Mrs. Dixon, I'll share one of the two things that I wanted to.
You've been really quiet, so I'm glad.
Well, because I don't have quite the same history as you guys do.
Okay.
So, and you know, you were talking about how endearing she is.
Oh, extremely. And,
like, I've went to the comic book store a few times with my kids. I've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and they were probably 4 and 2 at the time. And as soon as we walked through the store, she would come out from behind the counter. And she would just take them off of my hands, and even if I wanted to, she'd take them up front to like the window display and just play with them with the toys for 20 minutes, however long I wanted to look at my comic books and keep them entertained and happy. And one time we were in the store, and my daughter Amelia found this little tree that she wanted to buy. Because she assumes that everything in a store is for sale.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it was actually like a little miniature Christmas tree that she picked up off some display somewhere in the store. And she's like, "How much is this going to cost me, Daddy?" And I said, "That's not for sale, honey. You just picked it up off of the, like out of the window display or whatever." And then Mrs. Dixon was like, "Why don't you just take that little tree?" And so Amelia did, and she still has it in her room. Up on her shelf with all of her other little knickknacks.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. How about that, huh?
Nice.
Yeah. you know, As I said, I think one of the things that really ripped the heart and the soul out of that was when Art died in 2009. And he was 82 years old when he died. And I don't think we all realized how old he was. Mm-hmm. He didn't look it. And I remember I was working at a job at the time where I had to deal with a lot of elderly people. And I think I had an idea of what the elderly was like in my head.
Yeah.
But so I never realized that Art was quite where he was at, because he was so bright, smart, dead on, could talk about anything, had a great sense of humor. And to think the man was 82 years old and went to work every day. Yeah. And I don't know if people remember this, but when he got sick, man, it was quick. Yeah. Like he was... so there, and then one day I went in and they said he was in the hospital and on life support. Yeah. Like you didn't see it coming. And then that weekend it was around Christmas time, because I remember every Christmas I would go into Toronto for a few days, and I remember I was at a friend of mine's house and I got the email that he died. It was a few days later. Like he wasn't a long illness, it was long suffering. It was quick, and it was almost you didn't see it coming. He was never sick a day. He came into work every day to that store, and the day he didn't, like, it was real quick. It was really a shocker. So
unfortunately, I remember I was headed home from work, and I looked over and I saw Mrs. Dixon and Steve in one of the the guys, the bookstore owners from across the street.
Mark Jockin?
I think so. Yeah, and they were all kind of near the door and they were talking, and I just got this really bad feeling. Mm-hmm. And I went over and she told me that he passed away.
I was like, yeah. No. Yeah, I got the email. Marty, do you remember where you were?
I actually ended up walking into the store, and both Steve and Mrs. Dixon were behind the counter, and they told me.
Oh, man. So yeah.
It was like the Wednesday after, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Should I tell the story?
I don't know.
You know the story I'm telling
about? Does it involve Luann?
Yeah.
No.
Then you should tell the story.
I know the story, and I asked Sarah if she thought it was in bad taste, and she didn't really think it was in bad taste because it's kind of just a hilarious story.
Okay.
About, like, the comic community and stuff.
Okay,
so
I'm going to tell
what it's worth.
I'm going to tell the story. So one of my very, very close friends who, oh my God, I don't see nearly enough of these days, and who really needs to hang out with us sometime. I'm inviting him to hang out with us. Because you guys would really love him. He's a big comic book guy, a musician.
Invite him to
the
barbecue.
I will. His name's Jeffrey Holmes, a.k.a. Jeffrey Danger. And you can sometimes probably see him pop up on different sites, right? And he's a real 1980s buff. Like, whatever was going on in the 80s, that's his thing. Loves Aquaman. Huge Aquaman fan. Well, Jeff Holmes had a file at Dixon's, and he was one of these guys who, you know, wouldn't come in for, you know, 4 months, and he'd have like a billion comics in his file, right? He'd be that guy. So I'd walk in, and Miss, you know, Art would be behind the counter. He'd go, "So Sam, have you seen your friend Jeffrey lately?" And I'm like, yeah, I've seen him. I talk to him all the time. I think you should tell Jeffrey to come in and pick up his comics. So I would, you know, I'd call him up. Hey Holmes, go in and get your comics. So he would go in and he'd get his comics. And, you know, in a couple of 4 months would go by and I know, and Mr. Dixon would be there and he'd go, "Have you seen your friend Jeffrey lately? Is it time for him to get his comics? I think Jeffrey should come in and get his comics." And so I'd call him up. And then Holmes would be like, "You know, man, I went into comics, you know, and they're just so... I just get this feeling they don't like me very much when I come in, right? Because, you know, there's all these comics and they're like, you know, like..."
It's called cash flow.
Yeah, exactly, you know?
He was not a great customer.
Okay, you know, and I just don't know what's going on, man, because I always come and get them and I'm like, I don't know. So anyways, of course, Mr. Dixon died, and I remember sitting in at the funeral, and I didn't really know anybody. I didn't see any customers I recognized, right? And I didn't know you guys at the time. Mm-hmm. So,
because everybody was wearing suits and stuff. You don't recognize them. They're baggy T-shirts with X-Wing fighters and Popeye on the shirt.
Okay. So anyways, so I'm sitting there, and Jeffrey Holmes is sitting there, and me and we're sitting there, and we're just looking really sad because we were just so sad. And I looked over at Jeff, and he looked over at me. And I looked over him, and I leaned over, and I said, "You know what? I found out what Mr. Dixon's final words were." And he goes, and he believed it. He goes, "What?" And I said, "Have you seen your friend Jeffrey lately? I think it's time Jeffrey comes in and picks up his books." Well, he just, first he believed me, like you just seemed turn a little white, you know, and then he just kind of, oh, you know, and, but what was funny is he did go in and pick up his books, and it was actually 4 months or so, and, yeah, I don't think he was going to there too much longer after. I don't think after that they had nearly the tolerance level for his shenanigans, but yeah, I mean, you know, funerals are sad, but... If you can't make somebody smile, you know, if you can just go out of your way to try to make somebody smile, make a dire situation a little lighter,
yeah.
You know, yeah. Why not? So, yeah, and he did go and pick up his books, but yeah, I think all he buys now is pretty much Aquaman. So he's a big Aquaman guy. Who the hell's a big Aquaman guy?
There's people
seriously.
Out there.
Oh, no, and Jeffrey Holmes, he'll tell you about it. Someday we got to have him on the show just to talk Aquaman. He sent me a panel one time of Aquaman throwing a polar bear at somebody. Okay? Like, I'm sorry. Like, that is pretty badass. Yeah, yeah. So, So anyways, boy, we've really made this this whole move.
Well, I have one more memory that I'd like to share.
Yeah, okay, great.
Which is another one involving my daughter.
Oh, okay.
And it was...
I love stories about your kids. I love pictures of your kids.
Yeah.
And I love the pictures your kids draw.
Yes, Amelia is actually quite an artist.
Yeah.
She's amazing. So maybe one day we'll be talking about her on the show.
Yeah.
As a comic book artist, if I can have something to do with that.
Okay, cool.
But so... I remember my kids, because of my interest in comics, and I'm sure Marty's kids are the same. And mm-hmm. I don't know about Chris. No.
Yeah. Well, no. Emma's a little bit into Harley Quinn, but let's put it.
But like they love the idea of comics because they see me reading it. They know when I come home with this, I have a special bag that I go out to conventions with. And when I come home with that, they're like, "Do you got comics, Daddy?" Like they're all excited because they know it's comics.
Yeah.
And so one day I was like, "Hey, I'm going to go into the comic book store. I live outside of town." We drive into town to go to the comic book store. And Amelia goes, "I want to start collecting comics too." And she was 4 at this point. And I was like, "Yeah.
Wow.
Let's go." So
you're raising that kid right.
So we went to Jeff's first because I had to look for some stuff. I already had my pull list at Dixon's, so we were going to go to Dixon's and like find something for her there. But so we looked around Jeff's and they didn't have any comics for children that I could see. Like, you know, like the kit did, for really.
Yeah. Kit, like, did you know, you could have given him a copy of The Discipline.
Yeah. I thought we might make it through a whole show without talking about The Discipline, but I know that's too much to ask. So then we walked up to Dixon's, went inside, and she was actually, when we left Jeff's, she started to cry because she's like, "There was no kids comics there, Daddy." And I'm like, "Don't worry. There's another comic book store. We'll find something." And she loves Scooby-Doo with a passion. And she's like, "I hope there's Scooby-Doo comics. I hope there's Scooby-Doo comics." And I said, "Well, I don't know if there's going to be any Scooby-Doo comics in the store, but I'm sure we can get some for you." So we walked up to Dixon's and they had a little rack of kids comics.
They always did.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know, depending on whatever was popular at the time, you know, they've still got SpongeBob comics and that kind of stuff and Teen Titans Go or whatever, you know, like the kid versions. And no Scooby-Doo comics. So we walk in and there was no Scooby-Doo comics. And so she starts to get upset. And I said, like, I, you know, lean into her and I whisper in her ear the way all parents do when they're trying to keep their children from getting upset. I was like, "I'll just go ask him if he can get us some." And she's like, "Okay, Daddy." And so I went over to Steve and I got him to bring in some Scooby-Doo comics for us, for Amelia. And but then we went around the rack and I said, "Look, there's no Scooby-Doo comics right now. Is there something else you want just for today? Let's pick a comic just for today." And she looked through them all, tried to pick a bunch of ones that were too old for her.
The Discipline?
Not The Discipline. But ones that she wouldn't be interested in because she's so young. And eventually she picked up an Uncle Scrooge comic book.
Okay.
And so she buys that comic book. That sounds like The Discipline.
There's enough of that discipline.
She buys the comic. We buy the comic book. And I actually have a picture that I'll put up on our Facebook page. I took it on my camera of her sitting on the floor of Dixon's reading her comic book. And I just think it's the cutest picture I've ever seen. And it made me feel so, so happy and proud as a comic book guy to see my daughter sitting on the floor. Like you guys were talking about being so excited, racing over to the counter to try to get those new comics and stuff. This is as close as I have to that, which is her being really excited. So we get to the car and she's sitting in her car seat in the back and she's like, "Daddy, I need one of those bags for my comic book." So even at 4, she knows comic books need to be put in a bag and board.
That's right.
And
she knows more than 90% of all antique mall operators.
That's true. So that's
flea market vendors. Bag and board that stuff.
That's my second comic book story.
What's really an interesting thing about that is, you know what? We've been to a lot of comic book stores over the last 5 years since we've all known each other. And the truth is you never see kids' comics. The only time I get kids' comics because I kind of buy them and I have to pre-order them. But Dixon's always had a small rack of kids' comics all the time, no matter what. It's one of the only stores you ever saw that at.
The only question I have is, what was with that little bit of duct tape that he had separating the kids' comics and the other comics? I mean, who are we kidding? What is that piece of tape there for? Come on. Just dedicate the whole rack to kids' comics.
Don't do that.
One thing I do remember, though, is I remember as a kid, I remember Art actually denying to sell me comics that had mature reader logos when I was underage. I remember trying to buy Black Hawk number one when they did the, I guess it became a Vertigo book eventually, but remember when it was still a DC book? Mm-hmm. And I remember there was like boobs in it.
Boobs.
Right? Like I just remember boobs. And I was probably about grade eight. I remember trying to buy Black Hawk number one and Art looking at it and looking at me and going,
no.
You know, and I was in grade
eight.
That's
a good thing the discipline wasn't out then.
No. And I remember, and it's funny that Black Hawk series for years was like one of those white whales because Art Dixon would not sell it to me. So I had to have, and I have like, just like Marty has like his seven copies of books he wanted, I have at least four copies of that book just because Art Dixon would not sell it to me. But on the other, we can laugh about it, but on the other hand, isn't it cool that there was a comic book guy who had that moralistic thing that he saw a kid coming in, even if it was a grade eight kid, and he was like, mature content, you're not buying it. How many comic guys would do that? I know personally me, some kid was coming in to buy the Discipline, I would be like, that's right, the Discipline.
You get on a list for doing that though, Sam.
I was a comic book guy, but of course me, if I saw kids come into the comic store, I was like, it's not a toy store. You know, please leave, do not leave your children here.
Why'd we give him back the mic so we could talk about the Discipline again?
I picked up some comics from a guy this week. And I didn't notice at first, but after I bought them, I was looking at them. And I looked at it, and it had the price sticker on it, Dixon's. And it had the issue number written on it, and the price. There was, anyways, he'd written, it was obviously Art's handwriting. He'd wrote, so it was kind
of
cool.
One of the things I remember loving going to Dixon's when I was a kid is they had the two boxes that had all the quarter comics. Do you remember the, you know, for a quarter? And a lot of the comics I bought was from that box because you could buy them for a quarter. But they would draw on marker the big B.
Yeah.
And I was always, first of all, that really sucked that they defaced it.
Yeah.
That was lame. But I always wanted to know what the B meant because I figured, why shouldn't it be D for Dixon's?
Bargain.
Oh.
Is that what?
And all
mystery
these...
solved.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I've seen a lot of bees on comics around here
because they were bought at Dixon's. I know. Yeah. I still have tons of them in my own collection to this day. I have a complete run of Millennium,
right,
with a bee on every one, and then I have a second set of Millennium that's in mint, which is worth what, about a 20 cents a copy. But I've never gotten rid of my ones with the bees.
Yeah, they're worth more.
because in my heart,
that's sentimental.
For the sentimental value, I've only kept them because I remember Millennium being on this rack and kind of wanting it, and then all of a sudden going to that box and going, they're a quarter, but I have to have the B. Okay, whatever, man, you know. And, yeah. And as I said, they're even worth less than a quarter now.
I think that was a pretty good send-off for a comic book store that has affected all of our lives greatly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just really wish Miss Dixon a lot of luck and peace, and it's good to know that she can actually, take a day off, you know, because she didn't have very many of them, and whatever Steve gets up to, I hope he's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even though, let's face it, you know, a lot of us guys have moved on to bigger comic stores as our collections and our needs were bigger, but, you know, part of us, I think, have a lot of love for this store, and we're going to miss it in our own way.
Definitely.
For sure.
Yep.
And so
I already do.
Seems like that's all the time we've got for this episode, and we'll have
this has been the first time the four of us have ever been in the studio together.
Yeah.
And it makes me really happy.
Kind of works.
Need some WD-40 for the
microphones.
Microphone arms.
So well, I don't know who's going to be back next week, but at least three of us probably.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about all the stuff that we had planned for the second half of this show that never happened. So
that means 2 weeks of Luann.
Oh,
2 weeks of Luann. Marty's out the door at that. All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.
This is Trent University.
Good evening and welcome to you all, and welcome to the first of this year's lectures.
This is Trent Radio.
Get thee to a nunnery. Why wouldst thou be a breeder of sinners? I am myself indifferent, honest.